Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Tennis.com podcast. I'm your host, Nina Pantic. This episode features my co-host, Irina Falcone, as well as our special guest, Lisa Raymond. She basically needs no introduction, but Lisa was ranked number one in the world in doubles and number 15 in singles. She won 11 Grand Slam titles in doubles and 79 total doubles titles, as well as four singles titles. She did all of this after two incredible years at the University of Florida under her coach, Andy Brandy, who she still works with today as they're both helping Allie kick. In our chat, Lisa tells us what she's up to these days and how she made all these different career transitions, as well as how she's trying to help Allie kick in her own career. But Lisa's not done yet. Even though she retired in 2015, she has plans to return to the tour. So without further ado, here is our chat with Lisa Raymond. All right, Lisa Raymond, welcome to the Tennis.com podcast. It is awesome to have you.
Thank you guys for having me so much.
Where in the world are you? Let's start with that.
I'm in a hotel room. I know that's shocking for people, but actually in Baton Rouge, Louisiana right now. Been working for the past year with Allie Kick. And my old coach, Andy Brandy, is the head men's tennis coach here at LSU. And kind of long story, but we're actually bringing him on to be a part of the team. So we're here doing some training with him. And he's going to be a part of our team moving forward. And it's been awesome. Been here almost 2 weeks now. And it's going to be one of our training bases now for Allie, which is going to be great. So that's why we're in Baton Rouge.
Andy Brandy, the Andy Brandy, as in
the from... Andy Brandy. Yes,
that
yes.
name is very familiar to me. That name is.
There's
very
only
to
one
me.
Andy Brandy. There only will only ever be one Andy Brandy. So you love him or hate him, and I've always loved them. It's true. I mean, you either have these, you know, Andy. It's you know, either you have this unreal relationship with Andy, or you don't. You know, and he'd be the first to admit that Andy would be the Irina. You know, I mean, he'd be the first to be like, you know what, it just isn't working, or it works, and. Andy and I hit it off from the time I was 17 when I went to school, when I went to Florida. And, you know, if there's one person in my career that I owe pretty much everything to because of that foundation he built, it's Andy. So, yeah, absolutely.
Aw, that's amazing. You don't really hear very often. Well, I guess sometimes you can hear about a player that can just have a very, that's a lifelong relationship.
Lifelong, yeah. But yeah, I mean, he coached me. You know, throughout my pro career on and off. And then, like I said, I mean, he's family. I mean, him and his wife and his son, I mean, we were just over there the other night for dinner and hadn't seen them forever and haven't seen his wife. And it was just like yesterday. I mean, they're just near and dear and just really, really special people.
Were you always going to jump into coaching? I think you finished up in 2015 at the US Open with Madison Keys as your last partner. And then she would have been your first pupil in a way. Was that always the plan when you were playing?
No, it wasn't at all. It was something that kind of just happened. I'm very good friends with Lindsay Davenport. And so Lindsay was coaching Madison at the time. And Lindsay, you know, I was still playing in 2015 and Lindsay was just like, look, I can't really do this full time. You know, would you be interested in kind of coming on and, traveling with her some weeks if it didn't interfere with your doubles and maybe you guys could play some doubles. It'd be great for her. And so I was like, yeah, sure. Like, you know, it just, I hadn't really ever really thought about it. And then I did think about it and I loved it. I love coaching and I love just kind of, being a part of a team, you know, part of why I probably did so well in doubles because I love being out there with somebody. But so for me, it was like a great segue from retiring because I literally went from the US Open finishing my last match to, you know, 5 days later, I was in Quebec City with Madison. So it was like, I never really like had to like put my rackets down and sit and be like, oh my God, I'm retired here. So So yeah, so that's kind of how it just kind of led to that. And then I took a break from coaching, and then Allie approached me with this opportunity and jumped at it.
I mean, Lisa, technically you're not retired. You played last year.
This is true.
So technically 2015 was not your last match.
That's a good point. And I plan on, look, I've got a few goals out there that I still want to possibly achieve. So I just got to get in a little bit better shape and get my butt out there and hitting a little bit more. But I'm not totally retired, I guess you could say.
The one thing I do want to bring to light, you said that you want to get in better shape.
Mm-hmm.
You went through a phenomenal transformation last year and you still look incredible. So
thank you.
Tell us about that. Cause I remember kind of last year in Colorado was kind of the first time that me and you kind of really got to know each other. And it was just, I mean, from the last time I had seen you, I was like, it's a different person.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. And, you know, it was just, I hate to say it, but I owe so much of it to Allie. You know, when I got the opportunity to work with her, I just kind of really took a look in the mirror and realized that, you know, I was just not happy with me and how I was feeling and what I was doing. And you know, as a coach, I just felt like, too, it's like I wanted her to be able to look at me and be like, okay, well, look what she's doing, or look how good she looks, you know, as far as her fitness, and she's working her butt off. And, you know, and I basically said to her, you know, I was like, look, you help me with my fitness, because she's an unreal shape and unreal athlete, and she loves her fitness. So I was like, help me with my fitness and my eating, and I'll take care of your tennis. And she was unreal. I mean, the program she put me on, I mean, you know, she was tough on me too. And I needed to be pushed, and I needed to, you know, somebody to kind of guide me a little bit with my eating and whatnot. And yeah, I mean, she her support was everything. And then, you know, it was like, you see like little changes and you want more, you want more, you want more, and you start feeling good. And I had goals and it was just one of the best things I've ever done. And just to feel healthier and just feel good about myself, you know? And so I owe a ton of it to Allie's boot camp, as we like to call it.
Nina, I don't know if you saw this, but there was a before and after picture and Lisa was holding a 40-pound dumbbell. And I was just like, that is, I mean, it's just incredible. You love to hear those stories. So
you guys have mentioned Colorado a few times here. So you guys went to Colorado last year, I think December, to go snowboarding. Lisa, you had never snowboarded. I know you were a beginner. And Allie, I hear, is incredible. What was this trip? I mean, also, is snowboarding really safe for tennis players? I can't stop thinking about that.
Look, if you know what you're doing, it's very safe for tennis players. I mean, Allie, again, as Arena knows, I mean, Allie has been snowboarding her whole life since she was a little, like, you know, 4 or 5 years old. So she's unreal. I mean, if she wasn't, I would never be okay with her being like, oh, I'm going snowboarding for, you know, 2 weeks in the off season. It's like, no, I don't think so. But like, she is so good and she's careful. But we had an awesome trip in December, and it was only, I think that was, my first time really snowboarding. And I, you know, those first few days were rough. It was difficult, you know, walking and whatnot, but Irina's great. I mean, let me tell you, she was an awesome teacher as well. Both her and Allie, like, Irina gave me a couple tips that I still, like, the second time I went, like, I literally was thinking, okay, all right, what did she say? I got to do this. And so, but it was a blast. I mean, we were out in Aspen and it was a slice of heaven out there. So it was a fun trip.
And Nina, mind you, we still like went in the gym. And yes, you know, we ate super healthy. We were eating at home. So it wasn't like, it wasn't one of those trips where it was just strictly snowboarding. We hit a few times.
We hit tennis balls.
Yes,
we did.
This sounds fun, guys. Lisa, I want to ask you, how is it being a beginner at something or struggling with something when you're someone who's won 11 Grand Slams and been number one? Like, how do you adapt?
Yeah, well, hence why I really don't do anything until I actually master. Like, even the snowboarding, it's so frustrating. I hate doing things. I won't do things I'm not good at. And I know that sounds like kind of a jerky thing to say, but it's like, I want, like, playing golf, I refuse to play golf. I will not go out until I have lessons, until like somebody teaches me properly, then I will go play golf. And then, so the snowboarding was definitely, had to kind of check my ego at the door a little bit. And I did have a couple lessons, like real lessons, as well as having, you know, Allie help me and Irina helped me. And yeah, I'm not very good at being a beginner at things at all.
It's hard. You mentioned the whole golf thing. I remember the first time I played, I was like, how come I'm not a professional already? This is my only time playing. What the heck is happening?
Exactly. And that's how I was with snowboarding. I'm like, wait, how am I not getting this? Wait, come on, somebody, please help me. I've got to get this like yesterday. And as professional athletes, that's how we are. We want things done yesterday.
When you were younger, you mean you were a great junior and you went to college, UF, you crushed it at UF, two NCAA singles titles, team title. I mean, I can't imagine a better career. At what point did you realize you're like, I'm a phenomenal tennis player and I should go pro? Was it before college, during college?
You know, I, like probably any junior, you know, like that was doing well. I mean, I always had aspirations. I mean, I always wanted to turn pro. And I mean, I remember as a kid, you know, watching Wimbledon finals and dreaming about holding that trophy. So, you know, I guess in the juniors, I mean, I knew I was good. I mean, for lack of a better word, you know, I was doing well in juniors. I was, you know, one in my divisions and nationals on U.S. national team and this and that. But I knew I wanted to go to school. I knew I was a young freshman. I was a 17-year-old freshman. So I knew that there was no way I was ready for the pro tour. Both emotionally or physically. My game wasn't there and I just wasn't ready. So I was fortunate that my parents and my coach at the time before I went to UF were like, look, you know, if you want to go to school, you know, the pro tour will still be there, you know, if you don't feel like you're ready. And so, you know, when I went to school after my freshman year, I knew I wanted to turn pro, but I wasn't ready. I wanted one more year of just like getting better and, you know, it's like, and learning, like, you know, people talk about, you got to learn to lose, but like, I think learning how to win and learning like that pressure of winning all the time is really important as well. And I really learned that in college. It was like, every time I went on the court, I had a target on my back and I had to deal with that. And so it was like, that growth both on and off the court, really helped me at UF. And then I knew after my sophomore year, I was like, all right, I think I can do this. So. And I'll be honest, like, it was one of those things where I was almost a little too cocky. Like, I went from, like, not cocky at all to, like, being like, oh, I'm going to, like, go out and I'm going to beat everybody. I'm going to be top 10 next week. And I learned that lesson quickly. That wasn't the case.
That's really cool. You know, you mentioned something about getting used to losing and getting used to winning. I think that it's very quick, the transition from college to pros. It's a very quick realization how different it is from maybe winning a couple matches every single weekend, week in, week out, to maybe losing week in, week out. What was it that helped you just overcome that getting used to losing?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, I was really lucky that I had the right people around me. I had a great support system around me, whether it was my family, coach, you know, and it was just, I mean, as you know, I mean, you get used to winning in college and then you get out there and it's, you know, if you're not doing well, I mean, the pro tour is lonely and it's tough. And it's so, it's like, you know, you've got to learn to, you know, pick yourself up, you know, because at the end of the day, there's only one winner every week. That's it. Only one person gets to walk away with that trophy. And how, you know, if you surround yourself with the right people, and I had the right people around me that were going, that always said to me, look, the one of the blessings of tennis is there is always next week that you can redeem yourself. So if you have a tough week and you lose, okay, you know what? There's next week. The sun's going to come up tomorrow morning and you get another chance to get out there and play and prove yourself. So, you know, I was fortunate, well, fortunate, not fortunate, but when I came out of college, I had a really good run. So I went from winning the NCAAs and I went right to Eastbourne and Wimbledon and did really well. I lost in the round of 16 in my first Wimbledon. So I was like, oh, okay. Like, this isn't so bad. Like, I can do this. And then, you know, it's almost like that sophomore slump comes in once everyone starts figuring out how to play you. You're not this new kid on the block anymore. Being on the tour for like 6, 8, 12 months, then everyone knowing who you are and just kind of like, all right, well, my slice isn't a secret anymore kind of thing.
Everyone knows it's coming.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Hit to the forehand.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to an episode of the Tennis.com podcast with special guest, former doubles number one, Lisa Raymond. She's telling us all about her college, professional, and coaching career. Keep listening. But you also launched to top 20 in singles before you reached number one in doubles. When did you decide to focus more on doubles? Was it like way later in your career? And what went into that shift? Because that's not easy. We've talked a lot of doubles specialists lately, and I think of you as both.
Thank you.
But I wonder if what you think of yourself as.
Well, it's funny because I played a lot of doubles throughout my singles career and done well. I mean, Lindsay and I won a ton of tournaments together. I won Grand Slams with Renee Stubbs. And but I mean, singles was always my number one priority, you know, when I was a kid and just throughout my career until I was about, it was early 30s. I was about 32 years old and my ranking started to drop. And I was starting to do really well in doubles consistently with Sam Stosur. And like we were winning tournaments, we had won a slam, and my singles ranking was getting to that point where I was starting to be in a lot of qualies. I wasn't making main draws, so I was about maybe like, I don't know, like in like maybe the 80s, 70s, somewhere in there. And so I knew that in order for me to get back to where I wanted to be in singles, it was going to take a lot. Like I was really, really going to have to, number one, probably give up the doubles, and also really, really recommit myself. And I'll never forget, funny story, I was playing in Memphis and this was a tournament that I'd won twice. And actually I should have won three times. I had a match point in the finals the third year in a row and didn't cover the backhand down the line, but that's okay. I don't remember that too well or anything. But anyway, but like it's one of those tournaments that, I mean, you guys probably know, like there's a place where you just feel great. And I knew it always brought out my best tennis. And I was playing Bethany Maddock. And I was had to play her first round. And she was this young kid at the time. She was just, I think she got a wild card, whatever. I was playing her at night. And I played her and I lost. I think I was number one or two seed and I lost. And I'm never afraid of coming off the court saying, that's it. Like, if I can't find it here, that great, like, pull it out of me here in Memphis, then I don't think I have it anymore. And I truly, that was it. That was my last singles match. And then I went on to, and you know, almost have like a second career in doubles with Sam and then with Liesl and this one and that one. But like, that was it for me. And I just made that commitment.
So that makes sense for your like doubles singles career. But then how did you end up playing so long and still have this desire in your, now your mid 40s? You're someone who's been on tour full time over 20 years. You have all these records for being the oldest woman to do, you know, win a slam on the hold number one spot. I think it's incredible. The longevity of the game has really, really changed. Like, what's the key to like being on tour so long and still wanting to be on tour?
Well, I mean, obviously just being on tour for doubles was very different, you know, playing at that age than playing, you know, singles or doubles or just singles. But, you know, midway through that, probably around when I was about 38 or so, I, again, had kind of a come to Jesus with myself and one of my ex-doubles partners, Renee Stubbs, you guys, I'm sure you know well, she pointed it out to me too. We were playing together and I had just gone through this whole thing I was just in horrible shape. I had just kind of like, I had some stuff going on personal life and it just kind of like, I just kind of let myself go a little bit. And she literally just said, what are you doing with yourself? You know, you're a shell of who you used to be. And I took a long look in the mirror after that conversation I completely rededicated myself at 38 and so got in great shape and worked my butt off and got back to number one in the world and won slams again. And so for me, it was about like, just kind of almost like, I almost had like all these little like sub careers within my career, if that makes any sense. You know, so, you know, I attribute a lot to like that, like getting in that better shape at the end of my career. But I think too, a lot of the reason why I wanted to keep playing for so long was not only just having the goals that I had, but it was, the fact that like at a young age, like I never got burned out. Like I really didn't. Like I never went to tennis academies. I never, like, my parents didn't push me. And the way, you know, I guess, you know, the hours that are spent on the court now. And now, look, having said that, you know, have things changed? Yes. Can you maybe take the route that I took and become a professional tennis player and be as successful? I don't know. And I hate to even say that, because as much as I love the path that I took, I don't know if now you can only play 2 hours a day, you know, as a kid, and not, you know, be playing tournaments every weekend and not, you know, be thrown into it the way they are now. I mean, technology has changed. I mean, it's so much more of a physical sport. I mean, things are so different. So, but again, I attribute a lot of my longevity to, you know, that how I was kind of groomed and raised, really, with my career and my schedule and all that kind of good stuff.
But when you said you have multiple careers, did you ever want to quit completely? Was there times where you wanted to give it up? Because it sounds like you have this like really fast track into being a good pro and then having the right team and then having stability and different partners. Or was there times where you were like, I'm over this?
No, I can honestly say, I honestly can say that I never really had that. And again, I was blessed with a fantastic career. And again, I never really wanted to walk away until I did. Now, having said that, I had people later on in my life saying, why are you still playing? What are you doing? And this was like, you know, more towards the end. And that was difficult. It was people that like I was very, very close to. And, you know, and I just would say to them, look, until you walk in these shoes, I mean, you can't tell a professional athlete to stop. Like they have to do it. They have to do it on their own terms. And so, so until I really stopped, until I put my rackets down on a tour, I never really said like, I want out. I hate this. You know, and again, not saying that obviously throughout my career, there were times where there was ebbs and flows like anything else. And there was ups and downs and times when I was struggling and I couldn't win a first. I mean, I went through a period of losing, I think something like 11 first rounds. And, you know, so there's lows, of course, but I never wanted to quit. Never.
Honestly, hearing you talk about how people had the audacity to tell you to quit and why are you still playing? Like that is just mind boggling. I didn't know people really, excuse my language, had the balls to do that. Like you just don't do that. Right? I mean, that is mind blowing.
Yeah, it happened. Like it was just, and people again, I mean, people very, very close to me, like people I was in relationships with or, you know, dear fam, like friends. And they would just kind of like, just say to me like, don't you have any pride? Or like, you know, when I would lose match and I just would say to them, look, you don't get it. And it's like, they would think that is a little bit condescending, but it's like, you don't understand. Like,
hi everybody. You're listening to an episode of the tennis.com podcast with Lisa Raymond. And she tells us what it was like to find out she's been nominated for the Tennis Hall of Fame class of 2021. Keep listening.
As an athlete, you can't tell us when to stop. You can't, because because then we'll always have these regrets and whatnot. But I'm happy that it worked out the way it did, and I'm happy that I didn't, you know, listen to those voices.
You mentioned earlier about how the game has changed so much since when you used to play, and obviously, I mean, you had a very, very long career. It speaks just volumes of your longevity and your love for the game. What have you been able to kind of instill in Allie? From your career, and I know that you've only been coaching for a little bit of time, but surely you have some good gems and some great bits of advice for her to, you know, continue succeeding.
Well, you know, I think it's one of the things I see in Allie is, you know, I see a lot of myself in the sense of how, you know, I would be pretty tough on myself. I was a perfectionist when I played, and, you know, there were times when, you know, my attitude wasn't the greatest, or I would, you know, just, you know, complain, not that she complains, but like when I say complain, like just kind of, you know, moan and groan out there and woe is me. And so what I try and do with her, like when I see her kind of go down that rabbit hole a little bit, is catch her and just say, you know, like try and give her a little bit more perspective, not just on the court, but just kind of like with her career too. It's like, you know, I wish I had, you know, someone around me or whatever that would have kind of pulled me out sometimes when I was going down that rabbit hole. So, you know, I just try and tell her, you know, look, you know, you're going to have to take your lumps here, you know, and there's going to be, you know, this is tough, you know, this is not an easy road, but, you know, I give you and everyone who's taken the road a lot of credit for doing it because it is a risk, you know, I mean, there are no guarantees in tennis. I mean, with our career, we're, you know, unless you sign big endorsement contracts or whatever, you have no idea, you know, you're going to make that paycheck every week in, week out. So with her, it's just, you know, giving her kind of that stability and giving her that perspective that it's going to be okay. And there's going to, you know, be, you know, you're going to take your lumps, but, and it is worth the risk. And it's so worth it, you know, and it's like, again, you know, you don't want to look back and have those regrets. And I think, you know, and again, for, I give her so much credit for doing exactly what she's doing right now and making this decision to bring Andy aboard, you know, and to come to Baton Rouge, you know, and to use this as one of her training, you know, training bases. I mean, and that speaks volumes about like what she wants to do with her career and the changes she wants to make and the dreams and the places she wants to go with her career. So yeah.
It sounds like she's prepping for a big 2021. And I mean, aren't we all? But
yes.
For you, it's big news in your life is you're on the ballot for the International Tennis Hall of Fame for the class of 2021.
Yes, thank you,
when
guys.
When did you find out? So you're on the ballot with Leighton Hewitt, Juan Carlos Ferrero, Sergio Bruguera, and Jonas Bjorkman. So when did you find out? How do you find out? And what's the process like as someone who's a nominee? Because I really have no idea.
Yeah, it was, I got a call from Stan Smith with the Hall of Fame. And he basically told me, you know, look, you're going to be on the ballot for 2021. And I just was like, so taken back. I mean, I was like, what? Come again? Like, what did you just say? Like, what? And I've known Stan forever. I mean, we were on different boards together with the USTA and this and that. And I mean, obviously just through the years, but it was just like, I still, even just thinking about it, it's just so humbling, you know, not only is, I mean, obviously the only female, but just, I mean, to be among just like, even in the same sentence or on the ballot and among these, the greatest that ever played our game, it's just unreal. And so first part was the fan voting, which was pretty cool. So all of October, fans could vote for their top nominee or whatnot. And so, I mean, I had everybody. I was just like family. I mean, Allie got all her people and troops, you know. Arena, thank you for your support. I mean, just everybody. Travis, just, it was just like, it was awesome, you know, seeing the people that came together for me to support me and, you know, vote for me was just so, so, again, humbling. It's the best word I can use for all of us. But so now what happens to find out like if I actually do get in. So now it's left to media, I think past Hall of Famers vote. And yeah, and I think we find out like January. So it's again, it would be just the most incredible honor. It really would. I mean, not that it is. I mean, it already is.
That's just so cool. Like when I saw Allie like had posted that, I was like, wait, that's so cool. We were snowboarding together a couple months ago, but that's really exciting. And yeah, I mean, you're potentially going to find out, assuming that, you know, 2021 is hopefully there with the tennis season and all that, you know, Australian Open is kind of feeling like it's going to happen. And so are you guys like planning on going over there and doing the 2-week quarantine and all that?
Yeah, no. So we actually made the decision that Allie, we're not going to go to Australia. So we're just like waiting kind of with bated breath for the ITF/WTA schedules to come out to see like exactly where she is going to start. But I just not going to make that trip and just go over there with the quarantine and just everything that's, you know, going on. I mean, God, knock on wood, let's hope and pray that, you know, the 2021, everything kind of starts to get back to some sort of normal. I mean, we all get back to some sort of normal world, but yeah, so that's what we're doing right now. Now she's just doing her whole preseason and we're just waiting to see the schedule and maybe start in, you know, some smaller events in Europe or something like that.
I think you're not alone in skipping out in Australia next year, to be honest. I've talked to a few players and they're just like,
it's crazy.
I really want to. Yeah. Yeah.
I know that we don't really know what's going to happen next in 2021, but it is exciting to hear that you might be playing more tennis. You might be inducted in the Hall of Fame. You're going to be working with Allie Kick and Andy Brandy. So we're excited to see what happens regardless of all the confusion in the world. And we really, really thank you for your time and joining us in this episode.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This was a blast. Anytime you guys want me to come on and tell my stories or whatever, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much, Lisa.
From the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, this has been the Tennis.com Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to stay caught up. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app, as well as tennis.com/podcasts. You can also see the videos of our episodes on Tennis Channel's YouTube page and tennis.com's Facebook page. We're your hosts, Nina Pantic and Irina Falcone. We'd like to thank our team, editor and audio designer and video editor Christina Koseva, producers Alexa March and Sean O'Malley, and executive producers Shelby Coleman, Kyle Einhorn, and Andy Chu.